Hey, it's me, Richie T. I want to talk real quick about a fundraiser for the Whitesides Elementary Music and Arts Program and their Shakespeare program. It's going on at Layton High School Auditorium on the night of Friday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. That's here in Layton, Utah, if you're a listener of the Cultural Hall here in Utah. WhitesidesPTA.com is where you can go and get tickets, and they're only $3.50. So if you're listening somewhere else and you're thinking, you know what, I'd just like to support a great music and arts program, do it. WhitesidesPTA.com. You can give them a call at 801-402-3600. The big opening, or the big act at that thing, it's Peter Breinholt from episode 6. So check that out. It's Whitesides Elementary, and thanks you guys for sponsoring the Cultural Hall podcast. You're listening to the Cultural Hall with your hosts Richie T. Stedman and Ashley Garvey Smith. It's a show about Mormon stuff.
Nephi, Ella, Samuel, give us land if they live righteously.
Right, it's another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode 31. We're going to be talking with Jesse Funk, formerly of Jesse Clark Funk fame, yes. Here in the second and third block. Welcome. Thank you for downloading us, or now if you're listening to us in St. George, Utah, thank you for doing that.
Are we live in St.
Yeah,
George now?
You bet.
That's exciting.
Right this second, as people are listening to us, when you just asked, are we live? Right there.
Really?
Yeah. Also in Cedar City. So thank you for people who tune in there. You can find any more information that you'd like at theculturalhall.com and hope that you would do that. It's also a way to get in touch with us, as this person has done.
All right.
There's a contact us button. This email is from Andy Wilson.
Okay.
In Austin, Texas.
Wow.
So he writes at theculturalhall.com. I love emails where people start with, I'm not usually one to complain. And then people complain the whole time. They're like sacrament talks that start with, the Webster's definition of complain is, and then he goes on.
Yes.
So I'm not usually one to complain, but I had to provide a little bit, okay, a lot, of a critique on your most recent episode.
Which was?
See Joe Anderson, how can you possibly be a Mormon and
a
Democrat?
Okay.
Though maybe not the one that you would expect, critique-wise.
Okay.
He says, well, I admire his aims in trying to bridge partisanship. I felt that he didn't actually do an adequate job answering the question. I was disappointed that Joe was not only a conservative, but also a fairly strong conservative. In terms of the mainstream of politics, the political views of Cleon Skousen, as you remember he mentions, and Ezra Taft Benson are pretty far outside the mainstream. I felt it was unfair for him to judge just how liberal a member of the church might be before he or she is, quote, just wrong. So by his determination, and this may not be his actual opinion, but my impression from listening to him, and I'm sorry for putting words in your mouth, Joe, he says, the only kind of Democrat you can be as a member of the church is a moderate pro-life Democrat.
Right.
Says, this is troubling, especially considering there is a strong liberal critique of many positions members of the church take in regards to some issues rooted in the gospel. I, for one, feel that many positions of neoconservatives are based in false doctrine that some of our evangelical conservative Christian brothers and sisters believe but are not revealed truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that I don't believe members of the church ought to be Republicans or that being conservative is antithetical to the gospel. Only that if we're all being very honest, political persuasion should simply not be an issue. When I lived in the Bronx while going to grad school, it was hilarious that most of the members of the church there held exactly the opposite view, meaning they had no idea how you could be a Republican and be LDS.
Mm-hmm.
Another major problem I had with the interview was while talking about environmental issues, your guest was afraid to talk about climate change. In my opinion, the most important environmental issue, and instead only talk about habitat loss and the environmental regulations of the 60s and 70s. As an aside, Andy continues on, you could do an entire show on climate change, and if you wanted to, I could suggest some guests like myself. He works for the Sierra Club on coal and climate issues. BYU climate scientist who has been involved in some of the most recent big programs. We could talk about Mitt Romney and John Huntsman on the climate and what he thinks a key issue in the debate should be, et cetera, et cetera. I won't go on. So instead of an honest discussion of why someone might believe in democratic or liberal principles based on the restored gospel of Jesus Christ, this ended up being an extended commercial and tease for the book and little more. I still had a good time. This was a good episode, and I did enjoy Joe's perspective, as much as I may take issue with parts of it, but I just felt it didn't actually provide a spirited defense of why someone could be LDS and a Democrat. Let me put it this way. If a radio show or podcast dedicated to issues of faith and Christianity invited a guest on to answer the question, "Are Mormons Christian?" I think most members of the church would be disappointed if their defender was, in fact, an evangelical Protestant who spent their time giving backhanded compliments to the church but said, yes, by their definition, they are Christian. Instead, that guest should have been put to an actual member of the church. And finally, writes Andy, okay, page 2 of email, let me completely disagree with his statements that the poor customer service he received on his mission was the result of communism. You got to go back and listen to episode 30 yes. If you haven't listened to it, yeah, by the way, especially after hearing this email. He says, I also served a mission in Russia, but also spent time in Armenia, a former Soviet republic. And the difference in service was night and day. We also had elders and sisters in our mission from the Czech Republic and Poland, former communist countries. They were equally disappointed by the customer service in Russian stores. I also served with 2 native Russian companions, one of whom told me the way I spoke with shopkeepers, he, and therefore they, considered rude and pushy. So the difference here is entirely cultural and not because of communism. Not to say that communism wasn't bad and didn't show in a lot of other bad aspects of the country, but I couldn't allow this bit of folk wisdom to pass without some pushback. Cheers, Andy Wilson, your biggest fan in Austin, Texas.
Love it.
And I don't know if that's true. We got the Wild family in Austin, Texas, and they're big fans as
really?
Well. So Andy
well,
Wilson,
they can have a competition.
Yeah, you're going to have to fight it out with them. But I thought that was a great, insightful, thoughtful email.
Very. I agree.
About episode 30. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the kind of the precursor to episode 30, it was I don't know if every bit of that episode was what we thought we would get out of it either.
Yes.
Agreed.
I will agree.
you're holding punches. No, it was difficult. You know, we mentioned before that he had just kind of woken up as he got there, and mm-hmm. we really wanted him to get into some of the issues and some of those that Andy spoke about in that email, but other ones that you know that we could really discuss. And it was
right.
hard
mm-hmm.
because it was like, how do you feel? Good. Okay. Well, I'm gonna need more than good.
Well,
perhaps.
And he even said, and I think he. I don't remember if this was live on the podcast or if he said it after we turned the mics off. But he said he doesn't really like politics. Like you,
yeah, it was just something that he was writing about.
Right.
Yeah.
So, because we wanted to talk about Mitt Romney and the Republican race, and he's like, you know, actually, I'm not really into politics, to be totally honest.
And it's like, so, oh, great, thanks.
Yeah. So it was a little bit different than what we thought it would be. It was fun. We had a really good time, and I like Joe Anderson a lot. And
C. Joe
Anderson.
I don't know. I think that's his
Clinton
pen name.
Joe Anderson.
Was it? Is that what it is?
I believe so.
Or
I better double
Conrad.
Check, but I believe it's Clinton Joe Anderson. So, yeah.
Just to give you kind of an idea of other episodes that are going up, and actually I wanted to share this with you too, and since I finally got it pulled up on the computer, a couple of reviews that have come in
okay.
on iTunes.
Let's hear them.
And you can do this too. If you listen to the podcast, you listen to the show, go to iTunes and let us know what you think. Your insight and your guidance as to what future episodes should be about is tremendously helpful.
Mm-hmm.
A couple new ones. Let me share this one with you. The Standout LDS Podcast. I love the diverse coverage from very active, faithful church members, but also perhaps the struggling and disaffected.
Mm-hmm.
Always remaining respectful, I'm amazed how the hosts walk the line between reverence and humor, and mostly do a wonderful job.
I think they're talking about you.
Yeah, probably. That's me. Mostly. Lastly, the information is consistent and current, and way to go, guys.
Nice.
So thank you for that. Then just a couple more. I'm a convert to the podcast since Keith Stubbs and adore it so far. Now, remember, he refers himself as a convert. If you haven't listened from the beginning, you're a convert here in the Cultural Hall. And if you've listened from episode 1 up to current, then you're a lifer.
Yep.
That's that term. As a Mormon currently living in a small rural town, it's easy to feel like I don't fit in with my fellow saints sometimes. The Cultural Hall podcast, with its in-depth discussions and frank discussions about faith and the occasional pitfalls about being a member of the church, has been a delight. It has quickly made its way in my list of podcasts to a consistent must-listen. Richie T and the gang,
I'm the gang.
Hey! Skillfully walk the line of being doctrinally sound and respectful to church leadership while not shying away from some of the tougher issues. Mm-hmm. Amazing guests so far. Can't wait to see who else they get. And then just two more. This is from D.L. Walker, who says, I work outside a lot, so I like having things on my iPod to engage my mind. The Cultural Hall podcast always finds interesting guests and holds my interest. Plus, Richie's humor keeps it fun.
Ha-ha.
And then... Thanks for that. And then finally, this podcast is a fantastic representation of Mormon culture. Why? Because by and large, it features people who do great or interesting things and just happen to be Mormon. It's important because it portrays people with faith at the center of their lives without being overbearing or didactic. Mr. Stedman has an interesting perspective on religion and morality, and although he is staunch in his beliefs, he has a broad perspective when it comes to the role of religion in society.
Did you have all your friends go and
write iTunes reviews on your podcast? I did not. But I feel bad. I've got a great email that I need to share with you where someone sings your praises.
Oh, nice.
So I will make sure and forward that on to you.
Thank you.
I think that's probably just because I've been around a little bit longer.
Well, yeah. You started this whole thing.
Right.
You're kind of the guy in charge.
Stop it. Stop it with your flattery. Your truthful flattery, but the same. So yeah, go do that. Upcoming episodes of the Cultural Hall. So there's a guy running for governor of the state of Utah. His name is Peter Cook.
He's a Democrat.
He's a Democrat. He just announced last week he's agreed to be on the podcast. So that's awesome.
I am really excited about
that. There is a DVD documentary about blacks in the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
The makers of that have agreed to be on.
Oh,
there is a book called LDS in the USA, written by two non-members talking about why Mormons can't just seem to fit in the world. And one of the guys who wrote the book, his name looked familiar, and I was like, well, I don't know why I know this, was an old college professor of mine.
Down at SUU,
and they've agreed to be on the podcast.
Oh, good.
So there's that. Also, we read an email, I think last week or maybe it was the week before, about single mom.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do that episode.
Yep.
Casey Scott, who's on Channel 2 here in Salt Lake.
He is not LDS.
His wife is... Bishop's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have them on and talk about what it's... He's got interesting stories, first of all, of being born and raised non-Mormon here in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And some pretty funny stories that he's got, and some pretty sad ones, actually, too.
Really?
As he's kind of talked about. So we'll talk about that as part of it, but then also the... How do you do it? How do you do the part member family thing? What's that like? Is that hard?
Now, and Casey Scott, you'll recognize on channel...
He's on channel two.
Two. Mm-hmm.
He used to do radio in Salt Lake. He's... Even if you don't know him and you're listening in Texas going, great, channel two, I don't know who this is. It's for who and what he is.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because he's on TV. He just happens to be a good speaker. I think we're going to get an apostate or two in here. I want to do an episode where we just talk to people that are like, I don't have any interest.
I like it.
So those are all upcoming episodes. If you have other suggestions that you want to hear in the Cultural Hall, please get on Facebook and tell us there. Or if you want to get in contact with us, theculturalhall.com. There's a contact us button there. If you have contact with someone where you're like, hey, you know what? It's not any of these types of things, but my friend Joanna Larson, for example, she's a really amazing flautist, and you guys should talk to her. You could certainly do that, and if you have contact information, please let us know so we can get in contact with them there, because we'd love to have them on the Cultural Hall. Yeah, did you like that?
She really is a flautist. I just figured out who she is.
Joanna Larson is a flautist?
I swear on my...
No, you're lying.
Really? Swear.
Look at that.
That's a real thing.
That's inspiration you just heard here on the Cultural Hall.
That was so funny. I just figured it out.
How do you...
We'll talk about it. Yeah.
Okay, so coming up, we got Jesse Funk. You think who? It's Jesse Clark Funk. You think who? Well, you got to come back.
You're not going to think who. You're going to know who she is.
And if you don't, come back in second and third block and check it out.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It is the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and joining us here on the back row, we've been saving a seat for her. It's Jesse Funk. I've got a prepared bio that I stole from jessefunk.com.
Yeah.
So go ahead and check that out, won't you please? And here we go. Jesse Funk, say hello.
Hello.
Oh, look, listen to that.
Oh, I like it.
Listen to that morning voice.
Yeah. Hey.
Muskiness.
the muskiness in your voice. I love it. Jesse Funk, give me another hello.
Yes, hello.
Anytime I say your name, I would prefer a hello. Okay? If we can work on that. Jesse Funk.
Hello.
No, give me a sexy hello.
Hello.
No, too sexy.
Stop
Come
it.
On, it's
okay.
The cultural.
You can't be picky. All right.
Hello.
There, perfect. Yes. Yes, I knew we would arrive. Jesse Funk.
Hello.
Holds a leadership certification from the University of Notre Dame and has shared her inspiring message of the power of confidence and leadership with thousands of people across the United States and even into Europe, Canada, and Africa. No Asia, huh? We'll get to that in a minute. Don't answer. She's released 5 solo albums, published 5 books, has toured 36 states with the Broadway musical Footloose, has performed for former Vice President Dick Cheney as an opening act for Donny Osmond, Josh Grayson, and Billy Dean, who, by the way, is not my lover. And she has toured with Broadway sensation Maureen McGovern. She has also been hired for hundreds of recording sessions as a studio vocalist, including songs heard on TV's America's Got Talent and The Biggest Loser. You know, The Biggest Loser that's known for their soundtrack. So we'll get into that as well. Jesse's also been a professional speaker for 8 years, and that passion led her to start a national nonprofit organization called the Ivy Girl Academy, a confidence and leadership training program for teen girls. Jesse Funk.
Hello.
Her favorite role in her life is that of an adored wife and mother to 3. Welcome to the Cultural Hall, Jesse Funk.
Yay.
I am so excited to be here.
You missed the hello on that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's okay, I won't make it. It's good to have you here. Jesse and I have been Facebook friends since 2010.
Wow.
But only real life friends for about 2 weeks.
That's how it usually goes with Facebook.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, I should be friends with them sometime. Don't have enough time to do it right now. Down the road, we'll become friends.
Right. Yeah.
But we bring Jesse in here. I was emceeing an event. She was dancing at an event. And I said, you know what? I wanted to have you on ever since you were Jesse Clark Funk. How about we get you in the Cultural Hall? So
okay.
So let's.
I'm so glad to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here. And Richie, you have to tell them what it was you were emceeing for.
Well, it was a Dancing with the Stars event for the American Cancer Society.
Who is considered the star? I mean, obviously you are, because you're Jesse Funk, but who else? Who are the other stars for Dancing with the Stars?
There was Miss Utah. There was Todd and Aaron.
From B98.7 here in Salt Lake.
There were a couple news anchors, I think. There was a really popular photographer. Think of anybody else.
Yeah.
Oh, and Dan Pierce, who has a really amazing single dad laughing blog.
Oh, that's
really
cool.
And I think he's a Mormon guy, so we may get him on the show later down the road.
Yeah, he's fun.
Yep.
And it was a great event.
Richie was really sad that he wasn't one of the dancers.
I could have done it.
You could have.
But I wasn't a star. I didn't have enough star power. I didn't have enough star cred to be able to be on
the
stage.
Well, they had you MC the thing, so clearly.
Yeah, but it's, you know, there's like MC, okay, any schlub can do that, but dancing on the stage. No, they actually asked me to dance, and I said I didn't want to.
Seriously?
Yeah, did?
I did, because I knew the way that it was explained to me. And this has nothing to do with the Cultural Hall, so I'll quick to explain it. The way that it was explained to me was like, we're going to be meeting with dance partners a bunch, and you know, there will be choreographed dances that you'll have to make sure and learn. And so it sounded like a huge time commitment. So I was like, pass. I can show up the night of and read a bunch of words on a paper, and that will be my contribution.
Right.
And you made a wonderful contribution.
Thank you.
It was beautiful, very moving. MC?
You don't mean it.
Mm-mm.
You're right, I don't. Just kidding.
So, Jesse, let's start there with the Jesse Clark Funk. Because I think that maybe more people would go, Jesse Clark Funk, sure. Jesse Funk, not sure. Is that her stepsister we don't like?
Yeah. So when I did my first LDS album, I wasn't married, so it was Jesse Clark. And then I got married on the next one, so we kind of had to.
You got married
segue.
On the album.
I did.
No, I'm just
okay.
Sorry. No. I was just giving you
it was a really bad joke.
Because okay. You said you got married on the. Forget
fail.
It. Fail.
So I had to. Epic. I had to do the Jesse Clark funk, but I never, ever, ever liked those two names together. I just don't think they sound good. So we have this brand new album I've just done. It's a country album. Mm-hmm. It's the first, little,
step into country?
Yeah. And so I decided I'm done with the Clark funk. We're just going to go with funk now.
Do you worry, though, that people aren't going to know? I mean, not that people aren't going to know, but they'll be like, that they'll do what I do, only in kind of a serious way where it's like, Jesse Clark funk, Jesse funk. Wait a minute. Yeah, who, is this the same person?
No, I'm not that concerned about it.
Well, and funk is an unusual enough last name that.
Yeah, hopefully they'll associate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I'm not too concerned about it.
So, singer.
Uh-huh.
And motivational speaker, life coach, as your
Richie had to give me crap about that, yeah.
On her Facebook page. It says life coach. I said, what do you do? And she gives me this laundry list of resume stuff, but never mentions the life coach.
Okay, well, so what does a life coach do?
A life coach is someone who just helps people pursue their goals and stay focused and be organized about where they want to head in their life. It's not therapy. It's not counseling. Mm-hmm. We don't really delve a lot into the past. We just move forward. So it's someone who just helps somebody get really clear on what they want out of their life. And my purpose in getting my life coaching certification was just to work with teen girls, which goes along with my Ivy Girl Academy, the nonprofit I run. So we just have a little coaching program that goes along with the workshop that we do. And we just do a lot of group coaching calls, and we just try to help the girls get focused and set goals for themselves. Because when we have goals and we're excited about our future, we're happier. It's a proven fact.
So is it like a secular young women's program?
No, it is. It's completely non-denominational. Yeah, wait, is secular? Yeah, secular is non?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Because it kind of sounds like that. It's like, hey, make some goals. And, right. You know, you're always looking forward, and what are you going to do?
Exactly.
And you're going to be successful. Mm-hmm. Is that essentially what it is?
Yes. Yep.
When you become a certified life coach, what do you have to do? Because to me, like sometimes like if I'm up late at night, it's like become a pastor or a certified life coach by calling the, you know, this society right now. And I just go, is there, you know, what kind of entails becoming certified as a life coach?
There's actually a bunch of different schools out there. The one I did was a 2-year program, and it's something you do just out of your home. You know, you can kind of go at your own pace, but it's pretty in-depth, teaches you a lot about human behavior and psychology and understanding what different clients need, how different people will function, you know. And anyway, it's a really in-depth process. It's a lot of fun, actually.
At what point in your career did you decide you wanted to be a life coach? Because you're a singer.
Uh-huh.
And you released
And you've been such for how long?
Mm-hmm. I started singing when I was 6, taking lessons.
And you're what, 20?
28.
28?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good long time. If people, you know, they've heard the name, but they go, oh, she sings, what would you say that you're most famous for?
Probably LDS music, because I live in Utah. And
But a specific song? Is there one in particular where I go, Jesse Funk? She's that one who sings that rousing chorus of...
I don't know. I get a lot of requests for a song called Clay in His Hands. That was the title track of my first CD. So I don't know. I'm not sure, Richie. I'm going to do a survey on Facebook, and we will find out. Back to you on
that. Okay. I'm going to hold you accountable about
okay.
it. Because the Cultural Hall, what we like to do is we like to not look in the past. We like to look forward, and we like to set goals like what we've just done.
I feel like he's mocking you.
And we,
mocking me? Why are you mocking our guest?
I'm not mocking. This is not a mockery.
I'm tough. I can take this.
It's merely, I'm just showing what I've already learned in that.
This is how effective you are.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, good. My sense of purpose is confirmed.
Let's talk about purpose. Why do that? Why for the young women? Why do this whole nonprofit organization and set out and be a life coach? Why? What's the motivation?
I really do actually have a very strong passion for teenage girls. I feel like I get them. When I was in school, when I was in junior high and high school, I was bullied. I had my hair pulled. I was cried. I was dumped. I was made fun of. And so I know what it feels like to be on that side. And then I was a huge bully myself. I was mean. I spread untrue rumors. I gossiped. I made fun of people that weren't as popular. I was totally mean. But all of that meanness came from me just being so insecure and so self-conscious of myself. And so I feel like I get girls. I get them. I get why they're mean. I get why they hurt. I get the space that they're in when they're that age. And so I do, I have a huge passion for them. And I kind of wish someone would have like hugged me when I was a teenage girl struggling so much. So I have this sense of purpose and this drive to go out and make sure that girls know how precious they are. And I do. I believe they are beautiful and wonderful. And they just need a little education on how to handle emotions, how to handle insecurity, how to handle mean people. And I think if they can have those kind of coping skills, then they'll be a lot happier and they'll feel better about themselves. That's my mission.
And dudes at the age or at that same age are obviously very different, because I don't remember a lot of that growing up. I mean, sure, there was some bullying and, oh, these guys are going to get in a fight later. But I mean, you use the term Mean Girls and my mind automatically goes to the movie that was made. And that is pretty legitimate.
It is.
As far as what girls will do.
Yeah. There are girls that are taking their own lives because of bullying. And that is the reason. So it is. It's really sad. But you're right. Boys are clueless. Let's just establish that right now.
That's so true.
Oh, I get it.
They don't see as much of it because they're not as plagued with pressure to be like, to look a certain way or to look like the image in the magazine, or you know what I mean? Like, they're not as affected by it. They certainly are, you know, to a degree, but not nearly as much as girls.
You mentioned you were bullied as well. What were you bullied about?
I got made fun of a lot for being a singer. I missed a lot of school. And so people would say, oh, you're a singer. Well, then sing for us, Jesse. And if I would, I was bragging. If I didn't, I was too good to sing. And like, they would just, you know, there were jealousy. And I had that too. There were plenty of people like I wanted to be a cheerleader so bad, but I did not have the skills. And so I totally made fun of the cheerleaders, but it was really because I wanted to be a cheerleader, you know? So, I mean, just, so I played on both sides of that fence too.
It was interesting because I always wanted to be a cheerleader too, but no one dared pick on me. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think you're built for flying, honey.
No, baby.
He would have been a base. Yeah.
No, I'm a flyer.
No.
Look at this body. I'm flying over people's. Oh.
No, Richie. Thank you for that visual.
No, I could have been.
So where did the idea? I'm going to.
All right. We can leave the cheerleading flying alone. That's fine.
Where did the name? It's Ivy Girl, Ivy Girl Academy. Where did that come from?
I just wanted a name that was very classy and elegant, because a huge part of our program is teaching girls how to be classy ladies. We do a dining etiquette section where we actually teach manners and like how to sit properly so that you're always being aware of other people, making sure other people are comfortable in your presence, things like that. So we talk a lot about being a lady.
I get what you're saying.
Okay. So I needed like a classy name.
You were so classy about it. I was like, am I thinking of the same thing that what she's saying? Yeah, okay. That is what she's saying.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, making sure that people feel comfortable. But I was like, what she says.
Yes, so we're on the same page. Anyway, and I just thought ivy is a great little metaphor. Ivy, the actual plant, is very resilient. It climbs. It doesn't let a lot of things stand in its way.
Clings like a woman.
That's right. It's kind of a noxious weed. It doesn't go away. And I want these girls to be tough. I want them to be, you know, I want them to climb and not let anything stand in their way. So that's where Ivy came from. And anyway.
I like it.
So does the whole, I guess I'm trying to figure it out. So is it an actual place that people can go to, or is it a series of like sessions
classes.
Or how does it work?
It's a 1-day workshop, and they travel around. Actually, as of yesterday, we have 15 national directors. We have New York, Florida, Oregon, Georgia, California, Nevada, and a bunch of other places where women are planning a workshop. It's just a 1-day, 8-hour workshop for girls 12 to 18. And they plan the workshop, and then me and my board, we have 5 women here that run it, and we show up that day and we direct it.
Strictly LDS or no?
No, totally non-denominational.
So anything.
Right.
Could be
any girls. Any girls. The poorest of the poor, all the way up to the entitled spoiled brat who needs it just as much.
Is it principles based on the LDS church?
Nope, it's not. Well, I think they correlate, but it's not based on that at all.
Like, so what kind of things? You talked about etiquette and making sure that...
We have, I call them the 12 levels of ladyhood. So we go through confidence, leadership, gratitude.
Hold on, you're weird.
Take your notes, honey. Okay, so confidence, leadership, gratitude, service, dining, and social etiquette. Motherhood. We talk about getting excited for the amazing opportunity to be a mother, if that's something that you desire to do. We talk about grooming, how important it is to take care of ourselves when we feel put together on the outside. We're put together on the inside. Richie, you need to come to our class. And then we go into goal setting. We go into positive mental atmosphere, how we talk to ourselves and how to be kind to ourselves. And then personal power. We talk a lot about toxic relationships, how to deal with a guy who's controlling, or even a girlfriend who is manipulative or mean, and how to handle those kinds of relationships. So it's a wonderful, exciting, we play a lot of games, we play, we do a lot of fun exercises. So the girls are like constantly on their feet and there's fun music and they get to shop and they get makeovers. And so it's a blast. And my theory is as long as they're having fun and as long as they're laughing, they'll listen.
Is there any thought to do an Ivy Dude Academy?
Heavens no. No. I don't get guys. At
no,
all.
You don't understand
I've been married
it?
For 8 years and I'm still trying to figure out my husband.
Are there opportunities for guys like this? Is there such a thing?
I think there are. I've looked into some summer camps that are more focused on teens, you know, but guys and girls, like some co-ed things. So there's some really cool programs for boys out there.
Let's come back in the third block and let's dive into the music. Now that we've kind of gone this whole route with the certified life coach. And I think I finally understood what you meant by sitting in a way that someone doesn't feel uncomfortable.
Right.
I think I finally clicked it through.
Right. Just yes. Young ladies are sometimes not aware.
Well, no, because you don't know. And then it's in the wind. So coming back in the third block, we'll talk about Jesse Funk and songs, music, her testimony, and where that all comes from. That's back in the third block.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 576 to book your shoot today.
That's right. It's the third block of the Cultural Hall, and I haven't managed to kick her out yet. It's Jesse Funk.
I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. I'm staying.
So let's dive right into it. Music, Mormon music specifically. A lot of Mormon music is not very bearable.
Thank you for saying
that out
loud.
Yeah.
You know?
Thank you.
I mean, really.
That's true.
Ashley, who's here with me, Ashley Garby Smith, mm-hmm. Also a musician. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't probably consider yourself to be a Mormon musician, though.
Except for with Tom Worth and The Full Circle, we do Mormon music. It's Mormon Christian music, but as far as my own music goes, no, it is not Mormon music.
And if you want an idea of what the Tom Worth in the Full Circle sounds like, you can go back and listen to episode 17 when we had Tom Worth in the Full Circle here in the Cultural Hall. So check that out. So Mormon music, meh, you kind of either buy into the whole program or you're like, well, I happen to be Mormon and here's my music. You know what I'm saying? There's not kind of that mixed thing. Talk about it.
I concur completely with what you're saying. And I've done three LDS CDs, so I'm still kind of neck deep in the LDS music industry. And I'm so grateful. I have nothing but gratitude towards it. I feel so blessed that I was able to do three pretty good CDs. I think, you know.
When you say pretty good, do they sell pretty well? Or what's like the mark where you go, people go, boy, I'm no Michael McLean. But you know what I'm saying? Like, is there someone who Mormon musicians look to as like, that's the guy?
Yeah, actually, I think Michael McLean and I think Hillary Weeks kind of set the bar. I'm pretty close behind them in, as far as sales go, but I don't do nearly as much as they do in the LDS scene because most of what I do is very non-denominational. So, like, I do a lot of high school assemblies, and I can't talk about church stuff in a public high school. Richie.
What, anyway. Separation?
Separation of church and state.
Right. And so,
not here in Utah, though, right?
Right. Yeah, so I have to be really careful about like what I spend my time doing. I do a lot of like firesides. I do one or two firesides a month, and I've been doing that for the last 8 years. And I enjoy it, and I'm so grateful for it. But I think now at the season I'm in with, you know, my young kids and my Ivy Girl Academy and different things that I'm doing, I'm kind of trying to segue into a different industry.
They obviously they don't pay for firesides, but do they still knock off a percentage or two on tithing, or is it just
no?
You still can't.
Still, don't do that. Ever? No.
Yeah. No. <I'm
kidding>. Ever.
How do you do that? I've always wondered that about like the musicians that play firesides. Is it where you just kind of go, hey, tell your ward about me? I'm playing Midvale 4th on Friday. You know what I'm saying? Or how? Or is it like I can get a big list of everyone who's doing firesides and be like, oh, well, their writer says they only need, you know, potato chips and whatever in the mother's room. Like,
yeah.
It is just it's just a big list?
Yep. I think people assume that if you're a singer, you can do a fireside.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of how I started. I do a lot of girls camps and things like that. And I totally enjoy it. I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
How do you balance it, though, with your family? Because I got to imagine, I mean, I perform locally. I'm not a musician necessarily, but, you know, I act and I have a job that demands a lot of, like, public face time. Mm-hmm. How are you able to manage doing that and, you know, the high demand of being not only a mom, but it seems like kind of a Mormon mom almost. Mm-hmm. In some respects, to me, kind of steps it up that.
Yeah.
That oh, that's notch. True. That's true. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about that. Yeah, it's so hard. I have had to learn to be extremely assertive, and I've hurt a lot of feelings by saying no to so many things. Because I only allow myself one now in the last year. I only allow one fireside a month, mm-hmm. and I only do two girls' camps a year. And so I have to stick with my own rules that I set. And so when someone calls and they say, can we get you for, you know, July? I say, nope, I'm sorry. I already have something going on. So think of me
next time. How's 2015 look?
But that is interesting that you do limit yourself. Because I think that's hard. As a musician, it's a risky decision to make.
I know.
And so you're risking, obviously you're not risking losing money when it comes to firesides and girls' camps. But those are things that you like to do. Now, as far as doing professional gigs, do you have to limit yourself to those as well?
Those I'm a little more inclined to take, mm-hmm. and it has to be about money, you know, and which is unfortunate. But I've just come to a place where
I think it's that unfortunate.
That's good, because I've just come to a place where I'm like, if I'm going to justify the time away from my babies, and I love my kids, and so if I'm going to take time away from them, 6 and 3, okay. and 5, we lost a baby to stillbirth, but I really have to be so picky, because if I'm going to take time away from them and my husband, you know, then I have to justify it. And so I've learned that it's not selfish or greedy for me to want to be compensated. And that took me a long time to like get to that place. So yeah, professional gigs, like I try to do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you do speaking engagements as well. And mm-hmm. on top of, do you mix your speaking engagements and musical gigs? Like, do you do like an motivational speaking with mm-hmm. music?
Like, here's a motivational thought, and I'm going to wrap it out with a song.
Yes. And then when I finish, I'm like, and I'm going to close with a little song.
Yeah.
But I actually do. I love it. I love to incorporate a ton of like really upbeat, fun music that really tie in really well with what I'm already talking about. And mm-hmm. so, yeah.
What's your favorite song you sing?
There's a song on my last album called Dance in the Rain. It's a country CD that that I really love called No More Rainy Days. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorites. It talks about not waiting around for the rainy day to come. Like, we're always saving and waiting for the rainy day, but just choosing to live today, you know?
Yeah.
Seizing the day.
And do you also write music as well?
I don't. I used to. I used to try, and I suck.
Really?
Yeah, it just comes down to that. I've written hundreds of songs, mm-hmm. but I would never sing them. Like, really? Let alone no one else would ever sing them. So I don't have the gift. Mm-hmm. I totally admire people like you and people like my husband. He had a number one hit with Kenny Rogers, and he's
really
amazing at what he does. And I think it's a gift. I think a lot of people cannot learn how to write songs.
Would we know your husband from somewhere?
I don't know. Maybe just from that. He produces like EFY CDs, and he owns a recording studio in Bountiful. So his name is Jim Funk, and he's kind of handsome.
He is pretty handsome.
Just a real quick impression of Jesse Funk writing songs. No More Rainy Days.
Mm-hmm.
I love watching plays. That's what my mommy says. Dang it. Forget this. I can't.
We're in the same boat, Richie.
What is this, songwriting? So I didn't know this about you. But I would be interested to talk about it because it's real. You shared it with us. You said that you had a child who was stillborn.
Uh-huh.
And with the whole, the belief of the gospel, how, kind of talk a little bit about that situation, because I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Yeah. And actually, that was one of the biggest testimony builders of my life, because it was the first time that I haven't known anyone that has, well, I take that back. Like, there's only been a couple people in my life that have passed away. That I've known, really. And that's kind of
like
weird.
Like all your grandparents are still hanging around, everything like that.
Yeah, everybody. And so to lose a daughter, like someone who I felt like I knew her, you know, we went through 36 weeks together,
Wow.
And so to have her pass away and to go through a funeral for her and like to go through that whole thing, I just thought, okay, now where is she? You know, mm-hmm. like it was the first time I actually questioned eternal life and like the idea of a life after this one. And I really came to a beautiful place where I absolutely know that she's alive and she's having fun and she's loved, and I'm going to get to raise her. I know it. How did you come to that? It was a lot of prayer and a lot of angry praying. I'll be totally honest. Like, I have a very real, beautiful relationship with Heavenly Father. And I would just get on my knees and be like, I'm so mad. Like, I'm so mad. Why would you put me through this? What's the purpose of it? Like, what is the point? You know, it's so painful. And it was hard, too, because I went through that. And then I was really strong. It was really tough. And then I said, as soon as I get pregnant again, it'll be fine. Because you guys know, like, once you're ready for a baby, you just want a baby. And so I got pregnant like 3 months later. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, the church is true. God loves me. Like, everything's fine. And then I miscarried that baby at 9 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And it ticked me off. I was so mad. I was just angry. I was just in this really, like, angry space for a long time, months. And I finally... I just prayed about it and I said, I need you to remove this from me because I don't want to be angry at you and I don't want to be angry at life. And I especially want to make sure that I'm a good mom to my daughter that I do have. So I need you to just remove this. And he did. He like cleansed me of it. And that's the only way I can describe it. I felt like he hugged me and I just wasn't mad anymore. And I don't know why. I don't know. He didn't give me any reason for why it happened, but he gave me peace.
And so the time that you were dealing with that anger, did you continue to go to church? You continue to have a testimony? Mm-hmm. You were just angry.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of going through the motions. I'm like, yeah, right. I'll go to church, I guess, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
Yeah.
Like, I was totally just have an attitude and just, I was just mad. I was so mad. And obviously anger is a secondary emotion. It comes from just feeling really hurt. And I was just so sad about it. And anger came from that emotion. So.
For other people that are maybe dealing with that, what would you recommend to someone who goes through that experience?
I actually have a lot to say about this. There were a lot of people.
Good,
because
you have you're welcome.
I had so many people try so hard, and they had such sincere intentions to try to show love toward me, and
it'll be good.
But
yeah.
I know what you're going through
exactly, and I had some people say things that just like took the wind out of me. Like one man who was totally well-meaning, and I get it, like he didn't know what to say, it's awkward, you don't know how to handle it, but he's like, well, it's a good thing you didn't know her.
Oh.
And it just shattered me. It was so painful to hear things like that. So that kind of stuff. So if you know someone who loses a baby, even if it's a miscarriage at 3 weeks, it does not matter. You'd only say, I am so sorry for your loss. That is it. Because everybody... they handle grief differently.
Sure.
Some people want to talk about it. And if they want to talk about it, you listen. You're there for them. You do whatever you need to do, but let them initiate that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're like me, I am so introverted. I'm very private. I do not, like, if I'm having a hard day, I do not call a friend to cry on a shoulder. I just don't. That's mm-hmm. not how I handle my emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to be by myself. I like my space. And so when other people would try so hard to, do you need to talk about it? What can I do for you? Like, it just ticked me off. So everybody handles it differently. So all you say is, I am so sorry for your loss. You can, you know, and then just let them decide what they need and they'll reach out. If they need people, they will reach out for it.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, you give them that space. Mm-hmm. That is my advice.
I think that is such great advice because I do think people mean well when
absolutely.
They say things, but it's,
absolutely.
It's some people just don't say the right thing and it
I
can
know.
Be more hurtful than
I
it
know.
Can be helpful.
And it's so hard because you don't know what to say. You just don't have any idea. You want to say something profound. You want to be as loving as possible. And that is so sincere and that is beautiful. But in a situation like that, just say, I am so sorry for your loss. That is it. Period.
Especially, I know where you're talking about on the side of you want to help. I had two good friends of mine from college, actually one who I used to do radio with back in the day, and now I'm the godfather of their son Brigham.
Cool.
But they similar kind of situation, and I just remember being like, well, okay, you know, I mean, I couldn't even get out there, really, you just didn't know what to say. It was I love you. And I think that's legitimately what I said. And they had they did a funeral service, for their daughter and everything like that. And similar to like how you were describing it, it was a very spiritual experience where it was like, okay, I get that there's kind of this eternal plan of everything, and it wasn't, I mean, certainly they would have loved to have been able to raise her, but mm-hmm. it wasn't like there was this loss, you know, mm-hmm. at that time. It was just kind of a, you know, see you later kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
but an amazing spiritual experience like that. But I just, yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, I
don't know what to
I
say.
Really would like to, you know, I would have done anything to take any sort of their pain away, but it's like, I love you.
Exactly. Is and that that's good? That's great. I think saying that or maybe just a hug with no words, like whatever, you know, whatever you really feel. I mean, obviously, if you know the person sure. and you understand how they're going through it, you know, then you can obviously cater to that. But I just think for the general public, it's so important to just like make sure they know that you're there, but just kind of leave it alone and let them initiate whatever they need.
How do you know the church is true?
Sorry, I can't take you seriously.
He's like staring right at you.
You're so goofy all the time when you ask a serious question. I can't take you seriously. Okay, I do. I
know
the
that you do. I know that you do. What I asked you was, how do you know?
I know because I have had.
And let me give you the reason why. Sorry, okay. Let me give it a little preface of it. Because something like that would be hard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very hard.
Yeah.
You know, I would think that there would probably be not very many experiences that would be like that. And you talk about how you know, mad. And that's how I feel like the adversarial can come after people to try and, you know, create a wedge. And then you're not a part of the church anymore, especially mm-hmm. with your inspirational music and what you're trying to do for people in and out of the church and trying to help them to be responsible, young, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
contributing members of society that end up being great. But, you know. How is it that you know that the church is true is my question, because that would be hard. So I want to know how it came to be.
I feel really lucky that I grew up in the church and I've had my ups and downs of this is like, I do not believe this at all. And then times where there's absolutely no way I could deny it. You know what I mean? And so I feel very fortunate that I've had the time in my life over my entire life to be able to go through those experiences. Because I think if we allow ourselves to be honest and we allow ourselves to feel what we're naturally feeling, then I guarantee you will come to a place where you really do know. You know it's true. But if you're suppressing anything, I think it's really hard for people to really allow a relationship with Heavenly Father to start, you know, or if you're just wearing a mask and mm-hmm. you go to church and you're trying to, you know, dress the part and, mm-hmm. and act the part, but If you're not being authentic, then really, like, what's the point? But if you allow yourself to really feel Him and you allow His Spirit in your life, then I can just go from my own experience. I know you will know that He's real, that He adores us, and He wants us to get home.
Talk about it, though, because you said you had some low times and some times where you knew, you know, without any sort of doubt. Because mm-hmm. I imagine... And forgive me for these assumptions, that in some ways you probably haven't had a very difficult life in that, like, you've probably never lived on the street or any of those things. So what are the hard times when you're talking about where your testimony has been challenged a little bit? Kind of the, and I don't mean to say that you were dealt with a silver spoon or anything like that. I'm not saying that.
No, I know what you mean.
But
and you're right. I mean, I've never been like addicted to anything.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So what are the tough times for Jesse Funk? And then what are the great times that kind of kept you ebbing and flowing?
Okay. When I was 15, I signed a recording contract with a little Sony affiliate label in Florida. I left high school, left my family, and I moved down there. And this was when Britney Spears was like just coming out. So mm-hmm. they wanted me to dress like her, sing like her, act like her. And so they handed me these little like tiny little tube tops and like, you're gonna wear this and you're gonna dance all you know
sexy.
Suggestively.
Yeah.
Okay. Sex 96, of course I can. And then they wanted me to sing like these weird lyrics, and I was 15 years old, so it terrified me. But it was the first time where I was like, okay, well, if I want to make it as a singer and if I want to be famous, and I was totally driven by that, like right. I really wanted the glory and the glamour and the money, and I wanted all of that. It was so enticing to me. So the adversary was working on me so hard at that time in my life. And I thought, well, if I want to do that, then I have to make some sacrifices, you mm-hmm. know, and Heavenly Father will understand. Like, I was justifying everything. And so it was just a season where I thought, you know, I don't need the church. Like, as long as I'm a good person and as long as I'm nice and as long as I'm, you know, I try to, you know, do good things with my life, mm-hmm. then I don't need to, like, dress modestly. And I don't need to sing good lyrics. Like, I don't need that, you know. Right. So it was just a season where I thought, I don't need the church. I don't need it.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Yeah, it didn't work out. I only stayed there for 4 months because it was the first and only depression I've ever experienced.
Wow.
For 4 months,
like
I was
legitimate depression?
Yeah, like I really could not get out of bed. And it was the only time. And I think you know me now, Richie. Like, I'm a naturally happy person. I love to be upbeat. I love life. And it's very easy for me to be happy. And that was the only time in my life that I seriously did not want to get out of bed. I had some very minor suicidal thoughts. Like, I really was struggling. I was sad. I was very sad. But I mean, I was there pursuing my dream. I had this record deal. We lived in this beautiful house. We had a lake in the backyard with jet skis. And like, it should have been everything that I wanted. But I was so sad.
So how did you get out of it?
I left. I went home. I went home and I made the choice to go into LDS music.
Yeah, but so, I mean, you say you wake up, I'm depressed. Peace out. I'm out. You know? I mean,
no, it was like 4 months of a process. Like, what the crap is going on? Like, why am I sad? And then I finally decided, I went home and I kind of took a break, quote unquote. Like, I was trying to decide whether I wanted to stay or not. And mm-hmm. I went home and I sat in the lobby of the Provo Temple and I made out this little pros and cons list. And I said, okay, I either go back and I pursue my dream and be unhappy, or I can stay in Utah and give up singing because I didn't know there was any kind of music
LDS
scene here.
Music, right.
Mm-hmm. Or, and be happy. Those were my options. Go, unhappy, stay, be happy.
Right.
And so I made that decision and I felt like Heavenly Father was saying, all right, I gotcha. Like, don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. And it was really short after that I started doing studio session work, and I love singing in the studio. So it was just a really beautiful blessing. I call those things hugs from heaven, like those tiny little things where Heavenly Father's like, I gotcha, just trust me.
So as a Mormon mom, I want to ask you to speak to other Mormon moms that want to pursue their dreams and want to, you know, you do a lot. You are a working mom, mm-hmm. even though you don't have like a 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
You're a working Mormon mom, and a lot of people might pass judgment against that and say, mm-hmm. oh, you do so much. But what do you want to say to other Mormon moms that want to pursue those dreams and want to work?
I love that question. We were talking about this before we started recording. I am so passionate about this because there are so many women who do not allow themselves to dream. They do not allow themselves to be excited.
I can't dream.
That's right, because I'm a mom. I have to stay home. I have to be my child's court jester all day. If I'm not like right in front of my child entertaining him all day, then I'm a terrible mother.
Yep.
That is not true. There is nothing selfish. There is nothing greedy. There's nothing materialistic in wanting to pursue your own God-given talents. There mm-hmm. is nothing wrong with that. And I believe firmly that when we do something that fills our bucket as mothers, when we go to bunco night, when we pursue a photography career, when whatever it is,
I love that you went to bunco, by the way.
Thank you. If we're doing something really fun that we're excited about that totally fills our bucket, we go home and we are much better mothers. We are giving the very best versions of ourselves to our husbands, to our home, to our children. I firmly believe that. But when we deny it, we are totally depleted. We are completely just like energetically wasted, because we have to have something that fills us up. Because I'm sorry, laundry is not fulfilling.
No.
It is constantly like there's always laundry that needs to be done. There's no sense of accomplishment. So it's so important to fill our buckets and to really own that there's nothing selfish in that, because then we will go home and we'll be replenished. My husband gets like way more kisses when I'm happy. You know what yep. I mean? My children, I have energy to go make forts and get in food fights and go to the park when I'm happy.
Couch right. forts.
Yes.
Couch forts,
yes.
Yeah. And sheets and everything
yes.
from the hallway closet.
And they're
closet.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And we oh, can yeah. play hide and seek for like hours because I have the energy to do so, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it totally, it breaks my heart when women think that that's bad or wrong in some way, because it is not. Heavenly Father does not intend for us to completely sacrifice everything that makes us us.
Mm-hmm.
Makes us women special, makes us unique. And he has given us gifts for a reason. He does not expect us to just give it all up when we have children, because I believe it's a gift to our kids. We want them to be ambitious. We want them to be excited about life. And we have to set that example.
And
I
so
think it's a responsibility.
As a, so say
oh. Dang it.
Amen.
That's a hot button.
I love it. I know. It is for me too.
And I couldn't tell. So, I couldn't tell.
Pounding the tables.
If a stay-at-home mom comes to you and says, well, but I don't really have any hobbies or interests. I'm totally fine being a stay-at-home mom and being the court jester for my kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any hobbies or interests. So are you telling me that I'm bad because I just sit at home and I don't do anything and I don't have anything that I'm trying to pursue?
Heavens no. There's a lot of women who genuinely, that is what they absolutely love. They don't mind the housework. They do not mind making the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day for their child. They really don't mind it. I have quite a few friends that are like that. They enjoy it. They find a lot of fulfillment in the day-to-day stuff. And
mm-hmm.
and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those things.
Right.
I actually really enjoy cleaning. Not that I'm like a naturally clean person.
I've heard
but
you're terrible.
I am.
Right,
but,
Jim?
But I don't mind it. Like, I don't just hate it at all.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy doing things like going to the park and, you know, doing the fun things that someone else might consider mundane or whatever. I enjoy that. And
mm-hmm.
I love being a mother. So for someone like that, I would say that's great. That's totally great. But there are also women who are naturally ambitious, who are naturally, who have really amazing talents, and they're really good at, you know, I don't know, photography or, you know, cupcake baking, and they want to go open their own business. There's nothing wrong with that either. So I think it's all about celebrating what you naturally feel you're meant for.
Why do you think there's a difference between the men and the women? Because I think that there are some men that, that have that same thing, that they go, oh, I have to sacrifice because of a family, but that it's more likely that a man would be able to do it. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think we, I don't know. That's a hard question, because I think there's a lot of guys that they have that sense of responsibility. Like, they're the breadwinner, so they really, they can't pursue their dreams because they really need the 9-to-5 job with the great insurance. And so... I don't know, but I think it's a little more acceptable now for men to be able to say, oh, I've got this side gig, I really want to go try it, but oh, the wife, yeah, you just need to be home. Like, so I think there's still, I don't know, I think there's still some issues there.
They're probably gender roles that have been perpetuated throughout time.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Well, because it's an interesting situation. My wife is the 9-to-5, and I'm the one who's like... You know,
really?
Yeah, because I work 40 hours a week, but it's like, yeah, I work some hours here, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to work. In fact, nice. I probably on any given week will work about 70 hours a week, but it's an interesting dynamic between her and I where it's almost where she'll be like, oh, but shouldn't you be the 9-to-5, and shouldn't I be the one? It's funky.
Yeah.
It's a funky dynamic as far as that. Sorry to steal
like
your last
adjective.
Name and put that into that. What else? What other hot buttons? Do we have any other hot buttons that you want to go off on?
Not that I can think of. Those are things I'm super passionate about, so I love those questions.
Let's do this. What is your calling right now in your ward?
I am the 10-year-old Valiant teacher. I'm just all girls, and it's such a fiesta, and I'm also assistant camp director, and I'm seriously really so excited about that. I grew up with two brothers. I love camping, and it's the only calling in the church I would, like, campaign for. Like, in a new ward, I'm like, I would be amazing at, like, camp director. Like, please invite me to do that. Mm-hmm. And so they gave it to me, and
of course
I'm so
they did.
Excited.
does that count as one of your girls' camps that you go to, your own, for your ward? Because you said
yes.
You only go to two, so it does count as one of them.
It does, because I have to be there the whole time, and that's like 4 days.
Yeah,
you know? So my husband's going to be like, please come home.
Yeah.
Yes.
What would your dream calling be?
Honestly, it would be camp director. I'm totally not kidding.
Have you ever done it?
I love it. Yeah.
You've been the camp director?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I've been assistant camp director, and I've been to like three other camps in my ward just as like, you know, young women's secretary or whatever. I
but
love it.
The
I love
full-blown
it.
Camp director is what you're after.
Kind of, yeah, I do. I would love it, because I feel like I'd be good at it, you know?
Uh-huh.
I love having fun with the girls, but I can also insert the spiritual stuff, and I can also insert the, you know, teaching moments, but I'm really good at getting into their universe, in their minds, and like, we can have a lot of fun, and we're going to learn. And we're going to build our testimonies, you know?
Yeah.
And we're going to learn hand puppets. I wish you could see the hand motion that she's doing right now.
I'm such a hand talker, I know.
No, I had no idea. Finally, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith? Actually, this is something my husband and I talked about recently. I was just observing that even if you took Heavenly Father and the Savior and spirituality out of the equation, even if you took all of that out of the equation, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is such a good organization. We teach family and service and being kind and so many wonderful just life principles, you know what I mean? Besides, I mean, it's a double whammy that we get, you know, this beautiful spirituality that brings us a lot of peace, brings us a lot of happiness, but the church just by itself, I think it's really beautiful. I love that we always take really good care of our temples, and our church grounds are always nice and groomed, and you know what I mean? Like, I love what the church as a business, as an organization does, you know? And then I think it's a beautiful double whammy. We get the spirituality. It might be a little weird, but
no,
that was
an
observation I made recently, and I was like, I like it. I just like it.
It's your favorite part, not mine necessarily. You get a pick on what your favorite part is. We always ask people at the end of this to, as we like to call it, climb up on the Rammy Umptum and let everyone know where they can follow you, find you, tweet you,
buy you,
text you,
okay.
Buy you, etc.
Okay. Everything you would need to learn about me is on jessiefunk.com, J-E-S-S-I-E. You can also check out ivygirlacademy.com, ivygirlacademy.com. There are books for sale on my website. There's information about all of our workshops throughout the country on the ivygirlacademy.com. I'm on Facebook, just Jesse Funk. I'd love to be a friend. I love friends. Ivy Girl Academy also has a page on Facebook. So, yeah. Those two places are good
tweet?
Places.
Are you a Twitter?
Not a Twitter. Sorry, I hate it.
It's on its way out. Do you really?
I do.
Why do you
honestly
hate it?
If I didn't have to spend any time on Facebook, I wouldn't either. I told you guys, I'm super private. I'm introverted. I recharge my batteries by being alone, so uh-huh. I don't like social stuff. I do like Pinterest. I love Pinterest. That's kind of different though than Facebook, don't you think? Like,
yeah.
I don't love Facebook.
You're not airing out
Twitter.
All your dirty laundry on Pinterest.
Yeah. See, and that's what I love about Facebook. I hate my family right now. I feel so alone. Someone make me laugh. Cold, dark place. What's your favorite movie? Gone to the gym. And I do that too.
We all do it.
I always do the dumbest ones. Well,
so
we appreciate you taking some time being here in the cultural hall with
us.
I'm
so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you for doing it. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And when the time comes, you will travel home safely.
And if you weren't healthy enough to listen to this podcast this week, that you'll be able to listen to it next week. In the meantime, thank you. I love it when people hear that for the first time.
They just like giggle.
In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you
on the back row of the cultural hall.